From my earliest childhood, I felt that the priesthood was my vocation. All my studies were therefore directed to that end, and my life up to the age of 24 was nothing but a long novitiate. Having finished my theological training, I took all the minor orders in turn, and my superiors thought me fit, despite my youth, to receive the last and most serious degree. The day of my ordination was appointed for Easter week. I had never gone into society. For me, the world was bounded by the limits of college and seminary. I knew vaguely that there was something which was called woman, but I gave no thought to it. I was perfectly innocent. I saw my old and infirm mother twice a year only. That was the only link I had with the outside world. I felt no regret, not the slightest hesitation in face of this irrevocable pledge. I was full of joy and impatience. Never did a young bridegroom count the hours with more feverish eagerness. I could not sleep for thinking of it. I dreamt that I was saying Mass. To be a priest seemed to me to be the most wonderful thing in the world. I would have refused to be a king or a poet. My ambition knew no higher flight. I'm telling you this to show you that I was the last person in the world to whom such a thing should have happened, and of what inexplicable fascination I was the victim. When the great day came, I walked to the church with so light a step that I seemed to tread on air, or to have wings on my shoulders. I felt as if I were an angel, and I was astonished at the serious and preoccupied faces of my companions, for there were several of us. I had passed the night in prayer, and was in a frame of mind that bordered on ecstasy. The bishop, a venerable old man, seemed to be God the Father, contemplating his eternity, and I saw heaven through the vaulted roof of the sacred building. You know the details of the ceremony, the benediction, the communion, the anointing of the palms of the hands with the oil of the catechumens, and lastly the holy sacrifice offered together with the bishop. I will not dwell upon this. Oh, how right Job is when he says that the man is imprudent who does not close a bargain with his eyes. I chanced to raise my head, which till then I had held bowed down, and saw her before me, so near that I could have touched her, although in reality she was some distance away and on the other side of the railing. I saw, I say, a young woman of rare beauty, and dressed with regal splendor. It was as though scales had fallen from my eyes. I experienced the sensation of a blind man who suddenly recovers his sight. The bishop, so radiant a moment before, faded out all of a sudden. The tapers grew pale in their gold sconces like the stars at daybreak, and the whole church became quite dark. The lovely creature stood out against the background of shadow like an angelic vision. She seemed to be illuminated of herself, to create rather than to receive light. I lowered my eyelids, firmly resolved not to lift them again, so as to be free from the influence of external objects, for my thoughts wandered more and more, and I hardly knew what I was doing. A minute later I opened my eyes again, for through my lashes I saw her, glittering with all the colors of the prism, and in a roseate twilight, as when one looks at the sun. Oh, how beautiful she was! The greatest painters, searching for ideal beauty in heaven and bringing down to earth the divine portrait of the Madonna, do not approach this fabulous reality. Neither poet's verse nor painter's palette can give an idea of it. She was fairly tall, with the figure and carriage of a goddess. Her soft hair was parted and flowed over her temples like two waves of gold. A queen with her diadem, one might fancy. Her forehead of a bluish, transparent whiteness, spread broad and serene over almost brown eyebrows, a peculiarity which still further enhanced the effect of sea-green eyes that show with a sparkle and brilliance that were unbearable. What eyes! With one flash they decided the fate of a man. They had a life, a limpidity, a liquid brightness, which I have never seen in a human eye. Rays like arrows darted from them straight to the heart. I know not whether the flame that illuminated them came from heaven or hell, but of a surety it came from one or the other. This woman was an angel, or a demon, perhaps both. Certainly she did not spring from the womb of Eve, the common mother. Teeth of purest oriental pearl gleamed through the red of her smiling lips, and at each movement of her mouth little dimples showed at the roseate softness of her adorable cheeks. The nose was well cut and of truly royal pride, and betokened the most noble descent. Bright agates wantoned on the smooth, shining skin of her half-revealed shoulders, and rows of large pearls, nearly as white as her neck, fell on her breast. From time to time she raised her head with the undulating motion of a snake or of a bridling peacock, which sent a movement through the high, openwork ruff that encircled her throat like a silver trellis. She wore a dress of red velvet, and from the broad, ermine-trimmed sleeves emerged patrician hands of infinite delicacy, with long, rounded fingers, so translucent that the light shone through them, like those of Aurora. All these details are still as present to my eyes as if they dated from yesterday, for though my mind was extremely troubled, nothing escaped me. The minutest details, the tiny black spot on the side of the chin, the scarcely perceptible down at the corners of the lips, the velvet softness of the brow, the quivering shadow of the eyelashes on the cheeks, I took everything in with astonishing clearness. As I looked at her, I felt doors which hitherto had been closed open within me. It was as if little windows were unshuttered in every direction to open up unknown vistas. Life appeared to me in a wholly new aspect. I had just been born into another world of thought and feeling. A frightful anguish gripped my heart. Each minute passed seemed a second and an age. Meanwhile, the ceremony proceeded and carried me far away from the world, the entrance to which my growing desires were furiously besieging. I said yes when I wanted to say no, while everything in me revolted and protested against the wrong my tongue was doing to my soul. In spite of myself, some mysterious power tore the words from my throat. Thus it is, perhaps, that so many young women go to the altar with the fixed intention of refusing emphatically the husbands forced upon them, and not one carries out her project. It is thus, doubtless, that poor novices take the veil, for all their determination to tear it in shreds at the moment of uttering their vows. One dares not cause such a scandal in public, or disappoint the expectations of so many people. The wishes of all, the looks of all, seem to weigh on one like a cask of lead. And then the procedure has been so well arranged, everything so completely regulated in advance, and a matter so manifestly irrevocable, that thought yields to the weight of facts and becomes completely impotent. The gaze of the beautiful stranger changed its expression as the ceremony proceeded. Tender and caressing at first, it took the air of disdain and dissatisfaction of one misunderstood. I made an effort, violent enough to uproot a mountain, to cry out that I did not wish to be a priest, but I could not do it. My tongue clove to the roof of my mouth, and I could not translate my desire into the faintest movement of refusal. Wide awake, I was in a condition like that of nightmare, when you want to utter the word upon which your life depends and cannot do it. She seemed to be aware of the torture I was suffering, and as if to give me courage, cast upon me a look full of divine promise. Her eyes were a poem, of which each look was a verse. They said, "If you will be mine, I will make you happier than God himself in his paradise. The angels will envy you. Tear off that funeral winding sheet in which you are about to wrap yourself. I am beauty. I am youth. I am life. Come to me, and we will be love." What could Jehovah offer you in exchange for that? Our life will glide by like a dream, and be but a kiss prolonged to eternity. Dash that cup from your lips, and you are free. I will transport you to unknown isles. You shall sleep upon my breast, in a bed of pure gold, under a canopy of silver. For I love you, and will take you from your God, before whom so many noble hearts melt into floods of love that reach him not.